Are Juan Soto and Vlad Guerrero Jr. going to bat back-to-back for the Mets in 2025? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Thursday, January 16th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau, First Pitch underscore MLB on the Twitter machine, having all your baseball updates there. And Christian, I want to get to where things stand with Roky Sasaki and how it threw a wrench into international free agency. I want to get to the San Francisco Giants trying to reinforce their outfield after bringing in Willy Adames and Justin Verlander. But first, we got a report that the New York Mets have checked in with the Toronto Blue Jays on the availability and what a deal would look like to acquire Vlad Guerrero Jr. for 2025. Obviously, they have a vacancy at first base with Pete Alonso as a free agent. I think the question here is, do you think the Mets genuinely want Vlad Guerrero, or is this something where they've been in a stalemate, in a standoff with Pete Alonso for about a week now, and they're trying to find something to move that deal along?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, because if you were just to talk to somebody else in the free agent market, then that's not really helping move the needle, because there's not many first basemen left other than Pete Alonso. I think the Mets overall, I don't know if it truly makes sense to go after a guy like Vlad Guerrero Jr., because I think eventually Mark Vientos is going to be your first baseman of the future. I think that's just how it's going to be. But if you have the opportunity to land somebody who has the ability to be an MVP type caliber player in Vlad Guerrero Jr., and I don't think it's just the name. I think we've seen it over some times, especially in the second half of last season. I think you have to go ahead and at least give a call and see what's going on. Toronto is in a weird spot right now. And I think we've put most of our focus on the Bo Bichette situation, but now it's going to start to change ways because of what, you know, Steve Cohen and what David Stearns is now doing and picking up the phone and calling Toronto, asking about Vlad Guerrero Jr. I'm really interested to see, though, if this was to happen and all the hypotheticals, what a trade package would actually look like. What would Toronto want from the New York Mets to move on from a guy like Vlad Jr.? And how it's probably going to be a lot less than some people expect because he's on an expiring contract.
Yeah, I honestly don't think it's going to be that it would be that expensive to get Vlad for 1 year. He is a very good player. He is not at the same level of a Juan Soto. That was obviously a much bigger package in that, you know, going from the Padres to the Yankees. Michael King was a big part of that deal. I could see the Mets making an offer with one premier position player and then maybe another small piece or two. And like, if you look at kind of their farm system, they've got Jet Williams, who profiles to be a second baseman and an outfielder. They have Luis Angel Acuna, Ronald Acuna's little brother, who second base, maybe a little shortstop as a fallback thing, and outfield. They have, oh my gosh, the young the Philip Torres that tours ACL, Ronnie Mauricio. They have Ronnie Mauricio, who's like a third base, second base, maybe shortstop, fallback kind of thing. And it feels like they're probably not going to have the playing time for all three of those guys when they're ready. So, you know, Acuna didn't look that impressive in the minors, looked fantastic in a short major league debut. Mauricio really struggled when he came back from the ACL last year. Jet Williams is kind of limited by the power profile. I think one of those three guys and maybe another French prospect somewhere, and this deal probably could get done. I also kind of think that maybe the Mets are the only team that you don't have to worry about, hey, can they re-sign that guy? Because you look at like the Padres getting Soto, obviously they didn't think they could re-sign him. They moved him for that last year. The Yankees weren't able to re-sign him. I have no faith that the Cubs will be able to re-sign Kyle Tucker, but there's not a single free agent on this planet that you could say, I don't think the Mets can afford to sign that guy. So you pointed out a good point that Mark Vientos played third last year. To me, he's kind of like Rafi Devers, where he's probably better suited for first in the long run. And if you sign Vlad long-term, you've got a first baseman there in Vlad. You've got a third baseman in Vientos who eventually needs to play first or DH. You've got Juan Soto in right field who eventually needs to play DH. You kind of get clogged up, but that's a problem for the future. And I do think that they would be perfectly fine rolling with those two big bats at the corners and Juan Soto in right field. That said, I kind of think this was a little bit of a trying to get Pete Alonso to adjust his demands. Joel Sherman and John Heyman together on Wednesday night, like 7:30 Eastern or so, put out a report that the Alonso and the Mets are kind of in agreement on a 3 years, at least one opt-out, kind of a short-term AAV thing. But there's a significant gap between the two teams, the two camps' respective financial offers. And so I think leaking the news of us going out to get Vlad is maybe a little bit of trying to get Pete to come down on his offer a bit so that they can make a deal and just bring Pete back.
You think it's different for, let's just say that this lasts a long time, and you are correct. Let's think that this is just a ploy to try and get Pete to come down on his number and you're the Mets camp. Now, we just saw this with the pitching last year, especially Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell. They signed late in the spring training, and they suffered for it at the beginning of the year. A guy like Pete Alonso, who is probably going to be, is only bat only, maybe a little bit of first base, you know, but initially probably going to be at some point in time your DH moving in the future. How much do you think that will impact him if this goes on and strengthens out to, you know, we're only a month away from spring training. We're less than 30 days from pitchers and catchers report. So how long do you think this should go on? And if it does go into spring training, is it going to impact a guy like Pete Alonso just as much as it did with these pitchers last year?
I don't think it, I haven't pulled the numbers. I don't think it was that egregious for Matt Chapman when he signed late last year at the Boris Four there. And I do think that Pete Alonso's the dude that he lives for the home run derby. I would imagine he's been taking hacks and cages all freaking winter already. I mean, he's been probably down in Florida, you know, in the cage 4 or 5 days a week, taking a couple hundred swings, taking hacks, and at least seeing pit balls, seeing velocity, working on timing. I think he'll be okay. A lot of position players we've talked to for different things have said they need 50 at-bats. You get them 50 at-bats in spring, they're good to go. You know, they can get that over the course of spring. Some of them can do it as little as 25 or 30. They're good to go. They're ready for the season. I feel like Pete's probably the same way. He's probably the guy I'm least worried about losing his swing because he's such a, this is the one thing that I do is hit homers. I feel like he's probably fine. That said, I can't help but think about where my team, the Braves, dealt with this first base thing with Freddie Freeman, how they were trying to go back and forth with Freddie Freeman. And when Freeman's agent aggressively insisted that Atlanta up their offer, they just pivoted and traded for Matt Olson and signed up to an extension. And we know, we've talked about it on this show, Vlad gave the Blue Jays a number. And if the Blue Jays were to offer him that number, he'd sign the extension right now. Like those were, that's paraphrased from his own words. I have zero worry that the Mets would not just turn to Toronto, make the trade and then turn around and just give him that number and sign Vlad long-term. I mean, I could see by the start of the season, they've got Soto and Vlad locked up for a decade each. And you're looking at, you know, provided they stay healthy, the best 1-2 punch offensively in the National League.
Yeah, as of right now, but that surely is one that you would think is going to diminish fast.
Yeah, how's that going to age? That's the big question. How's that going to age? Yeah.
You know, I can't help to, I know this is a good conversation, I'm liking this one, but I can't help to think, because you talked about how there's a possibility with, you know, maybe one of the top prospects, and you mentioned Jet Williams, things like that. But if Vlad Guerrero comes over, Vientos is going to have to go to third base. You're going to have to put him there, and then you put in Vlad at first. So once again, that leaves Brett Beatty on the outside looking in. Would he be probably part of that trade package, you think? I think you'd have to put him on the block.
I hadn't thought of him. He is probably not the headliner in that deal, but it is entirely possible that, yeah, the Blue Jays, that's the second piece. Like they say, give us, you know, one of those three prospects, whichever one you're least highest on, and then we want Brett Beatty as the other main piece of the deal. I don't know what the Blue Jays 40-man roster looks like. Obviously, that means two guys who were either close to or on the 40-man roster already. But I could absolutely see Brett Beatty being part of that simply because, like, to your point, he would be blocked by Vientos. I don't think Beatty's played a lot of second base. It's not really a thing. And then again, Acuna, Jet Williams, those are guys, if they stick in the infield, they profile at second. So I absolutely could see a situation where you end up making that kind of deal and Beatty's the second piece. I just don't think he can headline the deal. I don't think that if this was prior to 24, right, where he was after 23 or even where he was before he debuted in 23, I think you maybe could get away with Beatty being the top of that deal. I just don't think you can at this point.
Philadelphia obviously won the division last year. I think Atlanta's going to be really good this next year, too, with the injuries coming back. Even though Juan Soto just signed this offseason, I still think the Mets are just one step behind those two. If they traded for Vlad, you got to think that conversation changed a little bit.
Yeah, it's. I still think the issue with the Mets is the pitching staff. Now, on the Braves Today podcast, I talked to Chris Towers a week and a half ago from CBS Sports, and he pointed out that he doesn't have a lot of worries with the Mets because David Stearns has always been really good at getting pitching and getting the most out of his pitching. And he kind of pointed to what they did last year with both Severino and Sean Manaea, kind of how everybody that they bought low on last offseason worked out, right? So I still think the rotation's probably the weakness, but I do think they could channel the 2022 Phillies and just focus on a ball go boom kind of thing, right? Just go out there, make a goal of getting guys on base, mashing home runs, beating every team 7-5, you know, and not necessarily worry about, as long as we have enough starters to get through a season, we'll just focus on outscoring everybody. And the variance on that in the postseason is a little iffy, but I do still feel like as of now, I probably have the Mets third in the division. But if you add Vlad, they're battling whoever, like it's a three-way tie for the division. Like at that point, it's a three-way race. Some of the odds that came out, I saw on Wednesday afternoon, I got an email from a sports book. They have all three of those teams, Braves, Phillies, Mets, all with better than 70% chances of making the postseason. Braves were the highest, Mets were the second, Phillies were the third in their odds of making the postseason. Yeah. Even though Phillies are a more complete team than the Mets are. So I still think, like, if you add Vlad, that's a team that's competing for the division. If you bring Pete back, I don't necessarily know it's the same situation. I feel better about your ability to hit home runs, but I think Pete's just like a tier below Vlad in just about every respect other than power production, batting average. I think Vlad hit over 300 last year. Defense, like Vlad's good enough where he played some third base last year. Pete's not even good at first, base running, everything. I think that Vlad's just a step above and he's a difference maker for the Mets, whereas Pete's probably not.
Yeah, I'm with you. Regardless of what happens with this trade, I hope it happens for the record because I'd love to see this one go down because I think it'd be fun And at least it's going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, talking about Toronto too in this, they were one of the three teams reported to be the finalists for Roky Sasaki. Obviously, the crown jewel of the international free agency class coming over from Japan, but without the 6 years of experience and having not hit 25 years of age to not be under the international free agency rules. International free agency opened on Wednesday. We saw a bunch of teams go out, commit big dollar bonuses to a lot of kids. The Los Angeles Dodgers are the only one of those three that really haven't signed any notable international free agents. The Padres made a couple signings. The Blue Jays made a couple signings. Both of those teams are obviously holding back a lot of funds for Sasaki, and I do think that's going to suck for the Padres because they've been really good at international free agency. But the Dodgers haven't signed anybody for more than that $10,000 that doesn't count against your bonus pool. Do you think there is any chance that Roky Sasaki goes somewhere other than the Dodgers?
No, I think he's going to, when it's all said and done, he's going to be a Dodger and all the puzzle pieces are falling together. It really is. I think Toronto is going to be like truly the odd one out. I just don't see him wanting to leave the West Coast. I'm surprised that Toronto even came into the top three. That should be a nod to them in an aspect, but at the same time, Toronto's got to start to really hate finishing in second or third place, because that seems like what they've always been doing.
So many guys. Shohei Ohtani. So Yamamoto supposedly, like, he took a second visit with them. Aaron Judge. Like, they were in on Aaron Judge. If I remember right, I think they were even in on Bryce Harper back when he was a free agent, but Toronto can just never seem to get the deal done.
Whatever the case may be, they need to update that PowerPoint in that meeting, Lindsay, for lessons learned and start to fix it, because second place is literally what's happening every time for that franchise. But there's a new report coming out right now as well that the Dodgers are looking to make some potential trades to pick up even more international bonus pool money so they can get more than $8 million in their bonus pool to make another offer, a stronger offer to Sasaki. So I think he's going to land there.
The way that works is I think they have just over $5 million right now. There's different tiers of dollar pools based on different factors, qualifying offer, free agents, luxury tax status, all that stuff. And you can acquire up to 60% of your pool to increase the amount that you can offer. It is, the deals are in increments of $250,000. So $250,000, $500,000, $750,000 are kind of the usual increments there. $500,000 is kind of equivalent to like a fourth or fifth round pick. We saw a deal, I think the Tigers, and this was not today, we saw a couple deals go through on Wednesday, but earlier in the year, we saw a deal where it was like an overslot fifth rounder went from Detroit to somebody for $500,000 in bonus pool space. So the Dodgers probably having to move a couple of their lower level prospects to get that space. But I'm pretty sure we all kind of think, yes, it's going to be the Dodgers, which would mean they're going to be in a really interesting position because they have a ton of pitchers for 2025. Obviously, they can absolutely start Sasaki in the minors. He's just like any other prospect as far as, you know, he'll have, when he's added to the 40-man roster, he'll have three options and all of that kind of stuff 6 years before free agency, although obviously they can sign him to an extension a lot sooner. They tried to sign him to extension right away. Rob Manfred's going to say something, but you could probably wait until after a year and then sign him to a long-term deal if you wanted to. To try to keep up with them, obviously it's been really tough. We saw the San Francisco Giants. They got Willy Adames in free agency, so they now have Matt Chapman, who they extended late in the season. They have Willy Adames. They added Justin Verlander to their rotation. We got a little bit more clarity in the afternoon of Wednesday on their plans. They've had talks with Randall Grichuk, the free agent outfielder, to join their outfield mix. They have two lefties out there right now, Mike Yastrzemski, who I believe's in his last year of arbitration. They've got Younghoe Lee. They've got righty hitting Heliot Ramos, who did really well against lefties, like not repeatable well. 370 average with a 750 slug against lefties. And two of their better hitters against lefties last year, Jorge Soler and Michael Conforto, are both gone. Soler traded to the Braves at the deadline. Conforto was a free agent and signed with the Dodgers. So adding Randall Grichuk to that outfield mix and having four outfielders to start the year, knowing that Younghoe Lee's coming off of injury, you're hoping that Heliot Ramos doesn't have a sophomore slump, is signing a 33-year-old Randall Grichuk, is this a good idea for the Giants, or is this, yeah, that's great, but it's still not going to be enough to get them into the postseason? I don't think they're going to win the division, but get them into the postseason after how bad last year ended.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad move. I don't think it's anything that's breaking the bank or anything that we need to be writing home about, but I don't think it's a bad move whatsoever. And I think you mentioned the main reason, Junghoe Lee, you know, coming off that injury. We don't know exactly what we're going to get from him. Yeah, that was a huge hit right off the bat. I think that's really changed their entire season because it happened so early in the year. But if you get Randall Grichuk on a deal, he doesn't have to be an everydayer kind of player, and you kind of hope he isn't if you get, you know, Lee, Yastrzemski, and Ramos all playing well. It will give the opportunity for them to move Grant McRae back down into the minor leagues, let him work a little bit, because I think, one, he has options, and two, I think he could use another year in the AAA levels because he was okay. I don't have his numbers up, but from the eye test, what I remember seeing, he could probably use some more time in the minors. And getting a guy like Grichuk off the bench, I mean, that can't hurt. That can't hurt at all. This team, I think Buster Posey and the front office staff are doing a great job.
if I remember on McCray, I think he struck out like over 40% of the time. Like his OPS was in the 600s, but he struck out like 40% of the time. So definitely, like to your point, could use some more work in the minors, get a little more comfortable with high level pitching before you count on him in any meaningful way. Sorry.
Yeah, and you're probably right, because what I remember is it just wasn't anything that was impressive. It was just nice to see, because I know he's young. I think he's only like 23, 24 years old. Regardless, though, I really like what Buster's doing. I like what the new front office is doing, the small pieces they're adding, and of course, Willy Adames. I think they're on the right path, but I think it would obviously be a stretch for what Los Angeles is obviously doing and the rest of the National League is doing to think that they are going to be a shoo-in for a playoff team. I think you can consider them a wild card team because we still don't know what's going to happen with San Diego and their money. I think they still have a lot of moves to do. But I think San Francisco's on the right path, Lindsay.
Yeah, especially if San Diego trades Dylan Cease, like we've seen some of the rumors. We've heard about them maybe trading Dylan Cease, about them maybe trading Luis Arraez, Robert Suarez, who attractive deal to get a reliever. He does have an opt-out, which complicates things. I've heard a little bit about Jake Cronenworth possibly on the move. Couple different interesting things there. For the Giants, I do think that if everything works out right, they're not going to be another 100-win team like they were a couple seasons ago, but I do think if everything works right, they could compete for that final wildcard spot. If you assume, and I think it's pretty safe to do this, that two of the three wildcard spots come out of the National League East, that Braves, Mets, Phillies trio, then you're looking at one spot to go to the runner-up in the West, or if somebody can, whoever emerges out of the Central. I think the Cubs are probably the favorite now that they've got Tucker, whereas the Brewers lost Willy Adames and their closer, Devin Williams, as well. I feel like it would be down to Arizona and the Giants would be my two favorites for the final wildcard spot. Again, assuming that the Padres make one or two of those trades, but either way, yeah, it's still not a shoe-in, even if you get Randall Grichuk, that's the move to push them over the top. But at this point, what moves are there really that would get them over the top? Your most impactful starter is Jack Flaherty, who is probably going to have to take a shorter deal. If you add him to the rotation, though, Logan Webb, Robbie Ray, Justin Verlander, Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison. They're two players, not one. And then Jack Flaherty is a pretty good 1-6. I do think you could see them maybe go make a move for a reliever. They're only lefties in the pen. They have Taylor Rogers, who is an unconventional pitcher, to say the least. And then outside of that, they don't really have a lot of other prominent lefties and have an unsettled situation at closer. So maybe they go get one guy. Their franchise record payroll was $200 million. I don't think they get more than one. So like, what do you do? Is Randall Grichuk the one, or do you think it's more important to get a closer or to get another starter versus adding what would be a fourth outfielder, a fourth starting caliber outfielder to your mix?
I think if you get Grichuk, you could still be able to afford some of the decent relievers that are out there right now, because that market really hasn't even seemed to take off yet, which is crazy because we're, as I mentioned, less than a month away from some of the teams reporting. I think the Dodgers are the first team to report for spring training, and it's on the 9th of February. So I mean, like, we are
because
really
have
close.
That Korea game series, out,
right?
Korea series.
Regardless of the case, Lindsay, I mean, Grichuk would be a good piece if they went after something else as well. But if they're only going after one more piece, the fact that Anthony Santander is still out there and you're talking about adding corner outfielder spots, I mean, you have to think. And he's mentioned that he would take a shorter term deal with a bigger AAV to go. I mean, what better idea for a San Francisco team that's trying to build, but at the same time, you're also trying to get production. You haven't had a 30 home run player since Barry Bonds in 2004 in this Giants uniform. Let Willy Adames and Santander try to cook. I mean, I think that would be great, but so far I haven't heard that being a possibility.
Well, counterpoint here to that is last offseason, you gave up draft picks to sign both Matt Chapman and Blake Snell. You kept Chapman, you extended Chapman. Snell walked in free agency. So is it worth giving up more draft picks to sign Santander if it's only going to be a 2 or 3 year deal, especially if there's an opt out and he could leave after a season or two seasons? Is that worth it to a new general manager or, you know, POBO who needs to have those picks to kind of restock the system?
Yeah, no, probably not. No, I don't think so. It would be nice to have him in the lineup, but when you're looking at the stuff, you know, involved with the losing of the picks and you're trying to really build that franchise up from where it's not been great over the last couple seasons, you know, that 107 wins they had in 2021 was just an absolute fluke. There wasn't anything you can, you know, definitely say that we did it, sure, but it's not something that they obviously repeated. So yeah. I think they're on the right path of making sure that they move forward. And obviously if they went and signed Santander and lost the draft pick, if it's not for a long-term deal, and in this case, probably what, at least 4 years would probably be enough to say that it's worth losing a draft pick for a guy like Santander, especially if you're getting 40 bombs from him. I mean, hell, even 30 would be nice in that park. But other than that, if you're less than that, then I don't think it's worth it.
True. Final note before we go here, kind of springing this on you, we didn't put this on the rundown, but we have just hit 40% of the Hall of Fame ballots having already been revealed. You know, obviously there's a crowdsourced project to track all of these every single year, a team of people that do it. Couple interesting things. Carlos Beltran tracking at 80% in his third year on the ballot. CC Sabathia clearly on the first ballot, 93% as of right now. Billy Wagner on track to make it in his 10th and final year. Andrew Jones just behind the 75% that he needs. But the big story, I think, is 160 ballots in. Ichiro Suzuki has 160 votes out of 160 ballots. What are the odds that Ichiro is the second ever unanimous inductee to the Hall of Fame behind Mariano Rivera?
I think it's entirely high, and I think it should be. I think he's a fantastic baseball player, what he did for this league, and what he did before he even came to MLB, Lindsay. I mean, he's done so much for the baseball community, and he's still doing it, right? So in his career, it was just an impressive career. And I think he absolutely deserves to be the first position player to be what unanimously decided. Because what, Griffey didn't make unanimous, right? He was right, close.
No, nobody's. Yeah. Griffey lost a handful. And there's Jeter a bunch of guys. Jeter lost a handful. Just a couple for some reason, they said, no, we don't necessarily think that that guy's worthy. The oldest, the only other one is Mariano Rivera. It's the only other player in history to be unanimous.
And I think you could make a, I don't even know if you could make a the case for him just because as a reliever, I guess you probably could. But with Ichiro Suzuki, I mean, what he's done for the entire league and just changed the entire game. And no, I think you definitely got to make him a unanimous, no doubt. And Andrew Jones needs to make it. Okay. Like that one's bizarre to me. I can't believe that he's still even on the ballot. He should have been in a couple of years ago. I'm glad that he's close to the number, but they got to make sure that gets over that threshold for sure.
He was at 61.6% last year on the final, but when the private ballots came out, he lost 8% of his support. The private ballots were 27.3% less likely to vote for him than the public ones last year. So even being at 73.8%, he needs like, he needs like 78% of the remaining ballots to get in. But if he has that same kind of drop in the private ballots, he won't make it. So it's probably going to be year 9. I think he did jump again, 61 to 73 as of now. He's tracking to eventually getting in by that 10th year. Like you said, I agree. Frustrating that he's not in. Some of that is people talk about the lack of longevity. They kind of forget he debuted at age 19. But flip side of that, Ichiro Suzuki absolutely has the longevity. The oldest player to start a game in center field in MLB history, Ichiro. The oldest player to start a game in right field in MLB history, Ichiro Suzuki. The oldest player to start a game in left field in MLB history, Ichiro Suzuki. So absolutely has the longevity, despite coming over here, you know, in his 20s, still just one of the greatest players to ever play in the game.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to watch him a couple times live. I saw him when he was playing with Seattle. Obviously, that was so fun. But I got to see him, which was wild, by the way, in pinstripes. He came to San Diego when I was stationed in San Diego when he was a part of the Yankees squad. And I saw him play. One, it was super weird to see him in pinstripes, but just be able to see him in his one of his final years was really cool. I got to see Ichiro Suzuki at bat in that game, and I got to see Mariano Rivera close it out. So it was a really cool game.
You may have seen the only two unanimous Hall of Famers in MLB history. This has been First Pitch for Thursday, January 16th. We're back on Friday to wrap up the week. Let's hope some stuff happens between now and then. In the meantime, you're listening on audio. Do us a favor, leave us a five-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.